As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The pharaohs of Egypt held sway once, but no longer. They are falling to weakness, and soon, new kingdoms will rule the world. Welcome to the History of Egypt podcast and Total War Pharaoh. This is the tale of Kurunta and Supaluliuma II, lords of the Hittites. The Hittites are a major force in the Bronze Age world. From their cities and bases in Anatolia, they spread across the region, destroying great empires, absorbing numerous kingdoms, and building a mighty legacy of imperial power. And yet, the Hittites are remarkably shadowy as a culture and an organization. Archaeologists and historians do their best to uncover the nuances of this ancient society, but in the modern world, the Hittites are definitely a lesser-known people. Let's see if we can change some of that. As you embark on your journey in Total War Pharaoh, you have two choices among the Hittite leaders. The first is King Kurunta, who rules his own kingdom along the southern coast of Anatolia. The second is the great king, ruler of all Hatti, Supaluliuma II. He starts in the central Anatolian highlands, at the ancient Hittite capital, Hattusa. Both rulers are mighty, with fascinating historical records. But as Total War Pharaoh begins, they will each face unique challenges on their path to power. First things first, a little bit of scene setting. The Hittite Empire emerged in the 17th century BCE, somewhere around 1650, give or take. The official name that they used for this place was Uru Hatti, or the Land of Hatti. The origins of the Hattians are a little bit murky, and different scholars and archaeologists present slightly different interpretations of the evidence. Simplifying it terribly, a people called Hattians gradually built a distinctive culture or society within the central Anatolian highlands. This is the heart of modern Turkey, not too far from the capital, Ankara. The Hittite kingdom, quote-unquote, developed slowly. They spoke a language that scholars call Hittite, which is part of the Indo-European linguistic family. The Hittites themselves called it the language of Nesa, or Nesha. This refers to a settlement in central Anatolia that had emerged in the early 2nd millennium BCE, around the 1900s, give or take. There is a long story behind that, but we are short on time. Suffice to say, in the highlands of central Anatolia, communities and societies gradually coalesced around a shared language and way of life. The early history of this kingdom is remarkably shadowy. There are only scattered textual references and archaeological remains. Scholars have pieced together the broad picture of a Hittite kingdom slowly consolidating its power and expanding its borders over the Anatolian highlands. From the international perspective, the first time that the Hittites become significant is when they began to move south. In the late 1600s BCE, a ruler named Hattusili boasted that he had crossed the Taurus Mountains and entered the region which, today, we would call Syria. And going forth, quote, like a lion on the rampage, Hattusili and his soldiers ravaged the Syrian communities. They took valuable items like furniture and beautiful statues, and they plundered the gold and silver of the region, taking it back to their homeland. It was a bold move, sweeping out of the highlands to plunder rich urban communities. The Hittites certainly knew how to make an entrance. Hattusili had gone far. His son would go even further. Around 1595 BCE, a ruler named Mersili I outdid his father in terms of military audacity. In a stunning campaign, Mersilli led his army more than 1,500 kilometers from home, over 900 miles. Where did they go? Well, the Hittite king marched from the Anatolian highlands all the way to Babylon. Babylon, in modern-day Iraq, was the great center of ancient Mesopotamia, the land between the two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates. Babylon had been strong, one of the strongest kingdoms in the early Bronze Age period. By the time that Mersilli came along, Babylon's power had declined somewhat, but it was still a significant religious and political center, a tempting target for an audacious conqueror. The Hittites marched some 1,500 kilometers to attack, overrun, and plunder the city of Babylon. The campaign was an incredible achievement. For comparison, this march was 1.5 times that of Napoleon's invasion of Russia. And when you consider the difficulties of transportation, communication, and supply within the early Bronze Age, Mersilli's achievement was incredible. So yeah, the Hittites really knew how to make an entrance and assert themselves against foreign lands. This would be a common feature of their political and military history. Broadly speaking, there are three major historical periods for the Hittite kingdoms. The first is the Old Kingdom, from 1650 BCE to 1400 BCE, approximately. The second is the New Kingdom, that goes from 1400 to 1200 BCE. Subsequently, we have a kind of spin-off kingdom called the Neo-Hittite Kingdoms. These emerged in Syria, and they weren't technically Hittite, but they used the language and imagery of the Hittite rulers as their primary source of imagery. So some scholars refer to this period from 1200 to the 700s as the Neo-Hittite period. Incidentally, if you are interested in a podcast on that, Scott Chesworth's The Ancient World is currently exploring these kingdoms. So that's the broad historical framework. Total War Pharaoh and this episode are primarily focused on the New Kingdom from 1400 to 1200 BCE. This is the age of the Hittite Empire. The Hittite Empire began to emerge in the 14th century BCE, and its most significant figure was a king named Supaluliuma I. Supaluliuma was a conqueror in the classic mold. In his reign, the armies of Hatti marched all across Anatolia, subjugating different peoples and integrating them into the political system. They also campaigned across Syria and northern Mesopotamia. One of Supaluliuma's greatest victories was when he invaded the lands of northern Iraq. There, he defeated and destroyed the empire of Mitanni. Mitanni, also known as the Hurrian Kingdom, had dominated this region for centuries, but Supaluliuma led a series of bold and aggressive campaigns, sweeping aside their forces and eventually destroying their capital. Supaluliuma did not march quite as far as his predecessor, Mersilli, but his conquests were far more enduring. Most significantly, Supaluliuma captured and occupied a city called Carchemish. Carchemish is in Syria, near the Euphrates River. It was a significant stronghold and the heart of a local kingdom. Supaluliuma occupied Carchemish, and he made it the center of a new imperial province. Following Supaluliuma's conquests, Carchemish would become the base for a local Hittite governor. In many cases, this governor was actually the son of the reigning king, the eldest prince of the Hittite royal house, so Carchemish was a vital center for Hittite imperial rule. It's easy to see why. The city is located in a central position between the Hittite heartland to the north and west, the lands of Mesopotamia to the east and south, and the provinces of Syria and Canaan to the south and west. Carchemish is a meeting point of several great lands. It appears on the map in Total War Pharaoh, and if your imperial ambitions extend to distant territories, this is a vital place to control. The Hittite expansion and the campaigns of Supaluliuma inevitably brought them into conflict with another great empire. Far to the south, the pharaohs of Egypt had claimed lordship over Canaan and much of Syria. And when the Hittites invaded this region, they inevitably came into conflict with the Egyptians. Subbaluliumar and his successors fought repeatedly against the pharaohs of Egypt. Subbaluliumar himself waged war against Egyptian generals and possibly the kings themselves, and one of his successors, Muwatalli II, even fought directly against the pharaoh Ramesses II. This conflict, the famous Battle of Kadesh, was a bloody affair around 1287 BCE. Both sides claimed victory in that battle, but the ultimate result was kind of a strategic stalemate. Kadesh is another location of great value to would-be conquerors, but it was located far from the respective homelands, both of the Egyptians and the Hittites, and faced with determined opposition, the two empires seem to have reached an agreement. Kadesh would be the new border. Subsequently, the Egyptians and the Hittites would find a more common understanding. A king named Hattusili III even forged a great treaty with Ramesses II. The Hittites and the Egyptians put aside their differences and swore to be friends forever. Surprisingly, the treaty held, and as total war pharaoh begins, decades after the agreement, the king of Egypt, Merneptah, is friendly towards the Hittites. He even sent them food during a time of famine. And yet, inevitably, your march to conquest is probably going to bring you in conflict with Egypt. So, let us now introduce our two rulers, the scions of the Hittite royal household, Kurunta and Subbaluliumar II. As total war pharaoh begins, the Hittite royal house is fractured. Officially, Subbaluliumar II is the great king of Hatti, but his rule is vulnerable. You see, Subbaluliumar's family are technically usurpers to the throne. The king's grandfather, a man named Hattusili, had overthrown the legitimate great king, Urhi Teshup. Hattusili had deposed Urhi Teshup, who subsequently fled to Egypt, but then died there or abroad. As a result, a new branch of the royal family had seized power for themselves, and Subbaluliumar II is a descendant of that branch. However, there is a complication. Urhi Teshup's brother, a man named Kurunta, is still alive, and he continues to hold power in his own kingdom. Kurunta is a royal prince. He is the brother of the late Urhi Teshup, who was overthrown. Surprisingly, it seems that Kurunta did not oppose the coup directly. When Hattusili seized control of the royal household, Kurunta apparently went along with it. A great king of Hatti made a treaty directly with Kurunta, and this treaty describes Kurunta as loyal to the royal house. The treaty said, quote, "When my father, Hattusili, deposed Urhi Teshup, Kurunta was in no way guilty of offence. Kurunta was not involved in any of it. So my father, Hattusili, took Kurunta and installed him in kingship in the land of Tarkhuntasha." End quote. So, for his loyalty, or at least his passivity, Kurunta now ruled his own kingdom, the land of Tarkhuntasha in southern Anatolia. Kurunta's treaty with the great kings of Hatti determined the borders of his kingdom. It gave Kurunta oversight and responsibility for all the temples in his land. That replaced an older system where the central government controlled it all. The treaty also established a pact of loyalty and protection between the great king of Hatti and Kurunta. It even allowed Kurunta to select his own heir to be the next ruler of Tarkhuntasha. Finally, the treaty determined Kurunta's status as the third most prominent in the royal hierarchy. Only the great king of Hatti and his heir, the king of Karkemish, were greater. With that in mind, it seems like Kurunta stayed loyal to the royal household. Although Hattusili and his descendants were technically usurpers, Kurunta went along with it. But you have to wonder if he was genuinely loyal, or if he was simply biding his time. Here, the work of archaeologists suggests something interesting. Excavators working in Hattusa, the old capital of the Hittite Empire, have found traces of Kurunta, small objects that reference this king and indicate his status at the court. Surprisingly, some of these items reference Kurunta as a, quote, great king of Hatti. That is interesting. Traditionally, there was only one great king in the Hittite hierarchy, the ruler of Hattusa himself, the one who dominated the Hittite political system. Other rulers in outlying regions might have the basic title of king, but only one had the title Great King. We have to wonder, if Kurunta was claiming this title, did he have any basis for doing so? Had Kurunta himself invaded, even seized, the city of Hattusa? Or was he simply going beyond his status, boasting a greater title than he had actually earned? Historians are divided on the nuances here, and there are many uncertainties. One scenario, put forth by Trevor Bryce, is that Kurunta and his faction may have initially accepted the coup, or at the very least, bided their time when the new family seized power. But subsequently, when an older king died, Kurunta and his faction may have seen an opportunity, and made a bid for the great kingship itself. One argument in support of this is the context in which one of Kurunta's records was discovered. Earlier, I referenced a treaty between Kurunta and a great king of Hatti. That treaty is inscribed on a large tablet of bronze. Curiously, that tablet was excavated at the city of Hattusa, where somebody had buried it beneath a set of paving stones. The decision to bury this treaty is curious. Was somebody literally burying the past, trying to remove Kurunta's memory from public view? Events are still uncertain, and there are different interpretations. If you would like to learn more about this, you can find a discussion in Trevor Bryce's Warriors of Anatolia, A Concise History of the Hittites. There is a decent chance that, historically, King Kurunta, the ruler of Tarhuntasha, made his own bid for the great kingship. If that is accurate, it is a wonderful start to your journey in Total War Pharaoh. As the game opens and you take control of Kurunta's faction, you are the ruler of Tarhuntasha. You control cities and lands in southern Anatolia, and these provide a rich and comfortable home for your faction. But unless you wish to die peacefully in your bed, forgotten by the generations to come, you will need to march beyond your established borders. Just as the historical Kurunta may have done, you will need to march north, seizing the mountain valleys and plateau for yourself, in your bid for the great kingship of Hatti.
Archers, fire!
Some of us love history. Others used to or never did because history was presented as nothing but the rote memorization of names, dates, and facts. Basically, the story got left out, and that made history kind of suck. My name is Greg Jackson. I'm a university professor with a PhD in history, and bringing history to life is my passion. That's why I created my podcast, History That Doesn't Suck. I want to teach you everything you need to know about U.S. history, but I do so through stories. Let me tell you about George Washington begging his men not to mutiny against Congress. Clara Barton saving Union soldiers amid enemy fire. Enslaved Frederick Douglass risking his life for liberty. And about so many other figures as their real experiences make industrialization, social movements, and even congressional debates and tax policy come to life. Subscribe to History That Doesn't Suck today. And join me, Professor Greg Jackson, every other week for a new episode. Where I'd like to tell you a story.
Opposing Kurunta is the great king himself, a ruler named Supaluliuma II. Supaluliuma II is a descendant of that usurping royal house. And ironically, Supaluliuma himself may, from a certain perspective, be a usurper. Sipaliuma II was technically the younger son of the previous king. His elder brother had been the first in line. But when their father had died, that elder brother had inherited and taken the throne, only to die himself after a couple of years. So the father and then the eldest son had both passed within a short time, and the eldest son did not have any sons or heirs to succeed him. As a result, Sipaliuma, the second in line, seized power for himself. This may sound entirely legitimate, but records from the time suggest that there may have been some opposition. Sipaliuma appears to have been insecure in his political power, and texts from the time give a hint at what was happening. In one record, Sipaliuma appears to defend his possibly questionable actions. The king says, quote, "The inhabitants of Hati offended against my brother, but I, Sipaliuma, have not offended against him. If he had had offspring, I would not have replaced him. I would have protected them." End quote. Sipaliuma seems to be protesting quite strongly that his inheritance is legitimate and he has not displaced anyone, but perhaps he doth protest too much. To guarantee his own control, Sipaliuma demanded oaths of loyalty from his subjects. Again, these survive in texts. One of them goes as follows, quote, "I, the oath maker, will acknowledge only the descendants of my lord, Sipaliuma. I will not appear supporting another man." End quote. In other words, Sipaliuma was clearly insecure in his political power, and to guarantee his hold on rule and that of his descendants, he demanded oaths of loyalty from those who would swear them. You have to wonder if Kurunta was among that group. Sipaliuma II's reign was not easy. After taking power, the new great king faced crises and instability along several of Hati's borderlands and vassals. In one instance, a Hittite royal official wrote a letter to the king of Ugarit on the coast of Syria. Apparently, that king of Ugarit had been slow to proclaim his loyalty and demonstrate his obedience to the great king of Hati. The letter said, quote, "Since you, the king of Ugarit, have assumed royal power, why have you not come before his majesty, the king of Hati? And why have you not sent messages? This has made his majesty, Sipaliuma, very angry. Send messengers with all haste, and see that gifts are brought." End quote. So apparently, there was difficulty on the borders, and not everyone recognized Sipaliuma's authority. To reassert that rule, Sipaliuma spent much of his reign on campaign. In the western regions of Anatolia, Sipaliuma attacked the region of Leuca. Leuca, or Lycia in the later Greek, is along the Anatolian coast, and this region was perpetually slipping out of direct control from the Hittite rulers. The people of Leuca, sometimes called Leucans, were quite renowned as pirates. From the late Bronze Age, we have reports of the Leucans raiding around the eastern Mediterranean, even as far as Cyprus and the coasts of Syria. Leucan troops had previously served the great kings of Hati with loyalty. A battalion of Leucans had even fought in the great Battle of Kadesh between Hati and Egypt. But far from Hattusa, in their own isolated region, the Leucans were a perpetual source of annoyance, and perhaps a worthy target of the great king's fury. Sipaliuma attacked the Leucan territories, and he claimed great victories in that region. Surprisingly, another of Sipaliuma's campaigns was against the land of Tarchuntasha. Tarchuntasha, in southern Anatolia, was the dominion of King Kurunta. But apparently, Sipaliuma attacked this region, and subsequently, he controlled it. This may be another indication that King Kurunta had rebelled and attempted to seize control of the Hittite Empire itself. After all, if Tarchuntasha was loyal to Hati, why would Sipaliuma attack it? But if Kurunta had rebelled, perhaps that would motivate the great king of Hati's vengeance. We can only speculate on the current evidence, but it does seem that around the same period, the great king of Hatti, Suppiluliuma, attacked Tarhuntasha. Whatever his exact motivations, Suppiluliuma seems to have been victorious in Tarhuntasha. And subsequently, the great king went further. He even attacked the island of Cyprus. Cyprus, or Alashia, was a strategic point in the eastern Mediterranean. Famed for its copper deposits, the island had been a significant kingdom for centuries, and the rulers of Alashia, the rulers of Cyprus, had communicated with the great kings of Hatti, the pharaohs of Egypt, and many other regions. By the days of Suppiluliuma II, Alashia, Cyprus, was probably more vulnerable. Piracy was increasing, and many lands were under threat from raiders and migrations. Perhaps, seeing an opportunity, Suppiluliuma attacked this island. A tablet written during Suppiluliuma's reign describes how, quote, "I, the great king, immediately crossed or reached the sea. The ships of Alashia, Cyprus, met me in the sea 3 times for battle, and I smote them. And I seized the ships of Alashia and set fire to them in the sea. But when I arrived on dry land, the enemies from Alashia came in multitude against me for battle." End quote. Interestingly, this text is the only known reference to a sea battle during the time of the Hittite Empire. For the most part, the Hittites were a land-based power, and they are not renowned for their coastal actions or invasions across the sea. And yet, Suppiluliuma II gathered ships, sailed across, and invaded the island of Cyprus. Suppiluliuma's attack seems to have been successful, and Hittite warriors may have occupied Cyprus for several years. Again, their motives here are a little bit unclear. Perhaps they were trying to access local materials, like copper, which was especially common on Cyprus. They may have also wanted access to foodstuffs, like the abundant fishing resources and agriculture of the island. Suppiluliuma may have been hoping to rid the seas of piracy, like the coastal raiders from Lucca. Or, this may have been a good old-fashioned imperialist project, an attempt to expand the empire into new regions and seize their resources. Whatever his exact motivation, Suppiluliuma II launched a daring invasion of Cyprus. If you should take control of Suppiluliuma's faction, this may be a worthy target for your conquests. The reign of Suppiluliuma II was the last flowering of the Hittite Empire. In fact, for many scholars, Suppiluliuma's reign is the end of the Hittite kingdom. This is down to one significant event that occurred during this period. Sometime in his reign, date unknown, Suppiluliuma II abandoned the old capital city of Hattusa. For reasons unknown, Suppiluliuma and his court removed everything from the Hittite capital, and left for a new city. We don't know where they went, possibly to Tarhuntasha, where Suppiluliuma had previously been victorious, but archaeologists working in Hattusa have suggested that this removal, this abandonment, was systematic and careful. Excavations in the city suggest that Suppiluliuma's servants removed everything of value from the old palatial centers, and subsequently, they abandoned what was basically an intact city. How many people left, and how many people stayed behind? That is unknown. And how long did the remaining city endure? That is also unknown. What we do know is that a few months or years after Suppiluliuma's departure, the city of Hattusa was destroyed. At some point following his move, parts of the city were consumed by flames. Again, the exact cause is unknown. The old narrative is that Hattusa may have been destroyed by invaders, possibly tribal people from the north, the Kaskians, or perhaps members of that mysterious group known as the Sea Peoples. Excavations in Hattusa are ongoing, and scholars are still reconstructing the history of this city and the kingdom it ruled. But one thing we can say, by abandoning Hattusa, Suppiluliuma's reign marks the end of the Hittite New Kingdom. It would never rise again. Sipaliluamah II may have failed to maintain the Hittite Empire, but maybe you can do better. Under your leadership, perhaps the Hittite Empire will consolidate once again and expand its rule over all of Anatolia. Perhaps you will do what Sipaliluamah's predecessors could not, march far to the south and even defeat the pharaohs of Egypt. These paths and more are open to you, if you are ready to take them. As total war pharaoh begins, the royal house of Hatti is divided against itself. In the south, King Korunta is biding his time, preparing to launch a bid for the great kingship of the land. In the north, Sipaliluamah II controls Hattusa. He is in a strong central position, but his reign is challenged on all sides. Whichever faction you support, you will be faced with tough decisions. You must seize control of vital mountain passes and the high plateau, try to guarantee your food supplies, and access the abundant minerals of surrounding lands. But controlling Hatti is not for the weak-hearted. Wherever you go, you will face bitter and sustained opposition. Raiders and invaders are waiting to pounce. How will you deal with them? How far will you conquer? Thank you for listening to A History of Egypt podcast introduction to the Hittite Kingdom as it appears in Total War Pharaoh. If you would like to learn more about this historical period, you can find a list of references in the episode description, or visit EgyptianHistoryPodcast.com for more details about these episodes. Thanks for listening.
What did it take to survive an ancient siege?
Why was the cult of Dionysus behind so many slave revolts in ancient Rome?
What's the tragic history and mythology behind Japan's most haunted ancient forest?
We're Jen.
And Jenny.
From Ancient History Fangirl. Join us to explore ancient history and mythology from a fun, sometimes tipsy perspective.
Find us at ancienthistoryfangirl.com or wherever you get your podcasts.